on Rosh Hashanah, there's many facets of our concentration, and there's emotion, and there's confusion, and there's fear, and there's hope, and there's a past, and there's a future, and there's a present, and it all comes together very much with Tzkiah Shofar. And I'd like to go through a beautiful, beautiful piece that Rav Moshe Feinstein talks about, and that gives us the secrets to understanding what exactly Shofar is all about. The Rambam brings down the Hilchos Teshuva, Paragimel Halacha Dalet. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's something that we don't know about, we don't understand. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells below the Shofar Rosh Hashanah, Gezeiros HaKosov. Remez Yesh Boi, there is something that we can understand. Klema, Uru, Uru Yishenim, Mishanaschem, wake up those slumberers from your sleep. Tiyakitsner Nirdomim, and get up from your Nirdom, from your state of sleepiness. Look into your actions. In other words, although it's Gzeiros HaKosov, although Tzkiah Shofar is something we don't understand, but the voice of the Shofar wakes us up. It arouses within us an emotion. And says the Rambam, those people who forget the truth and they live through the year, look into yourselves, look and better your ways. And leave behind the bad and choose the good. So the Shofar is supposed to do that to us. It's supposed to awaken within us a feeling of forgetting, leaving behind the hevel and seeking the truth. How exactly do we do that with Tzkiah Shofar? What exactly does it do to us? What are we supposed to be thinking? So there's one very, very poshut, very simplistic, but simplistic does not mean wrong, of the derech that Rav Shimshon Pinkus brings down. He brings a moshul. He says, Yankele, an 8-year-old boy, has misbehaved very, very badly in school. And the Rebbe phones up when the parents are eating supper, and he tells Yankele's parents that Yankele was extremely disruptive in class. He was throwing paper airplanes. He was being chuspidik to the Rebbe. He destroyed one of the school tables with matches. He was terrible. He was an absolute tearaway. And his parents decide that that's it. They have to punish him. And he's not going to be allowed to use his bicycle for a whole month. Mother says 3 weeks. Father says a month. And not only that, he's going to go up to his room now and stay in his room now until the next morning. And the parents are furious. And Nebuch Yankele goes up, Ovel b'chofi roish. He's a broken little boy. He realizes he's stepped over the limit, the red line over here. Retaliation from the military was overdue. And he's sent to his room. And as he goes into his room, he's very upset, very angry with his parents. He slams the door and he catches it on his fingers. Big, heavy door catch on his fingers. And instead of hearing a door closing, they hear an incredible shriek coming from Yankele. The parents run up and they see Nebuch Yankele distorted in pain, his face in tears, his face red in tears, clutching his hand, and they see that the hand Nebuch is disformed and is bleeding. And all of a sudden the anger of their parents, the disgust or the way he behaved, suddenly the emotions change, and poor Yankele is looked after by the parents, and he's taken and he's hugged and he's cuddled and he's kissed. And he's taken with the most utmost care to the hospital, and they x-ray it, and Nebuch Yankele has a broken hand, and they get it fixed up, and they buy him, and on the way back from the hospital, they buy him an extra gift in order to make him feel better, and suddenly everything changed round. What happened? There was din, and there was oinkshim, and all of a sudden, Yankele becomes kissed and hugged and bought presents for. The terrace is that a parent has the emotion of having to stricture a child, but when the child appeals to the parents and a child cries out in pain, then what happens is a parent changes from someone has to stricture to somebody has to love. Klal Yisrael are going through a time of Rosh Hashanah, which is the time of Din, and all the terrible things Klal Yisrael did on a national, on a religious level, on a personal basis, all brought to Rabbeinu Shlomo. And it's din, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sitting on din. And then he hears Tekiah Shofar. And Tekiah Shofar is a call of emotion coming deep down from the heart of every Jew. Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm in pain. It hurts. And this call of the Shofar, Uri Sheni Mishan Maskan, the sobbing during the Tekiah Shofar, the Tekiah Shofar itself is able to awaken the Kodesh Baruch Hu, as it were, his Midas HaRachamim, and he moves from the Kisseh HaDin to the Kisseh HaRachamim. That's the way Shimshon Pinkus put it, in a very, very typical way of relationship between a parent and child, between Klal Yisrael and Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, Dubin HaMagid has a slightly different moshel. Dubin HaMagid also brings the example of a parent and a child, but in a good classic way of the Balim Mosholim. It was the king who had a child, and this child, the king decided to send off on a journey and to establish him in a place that he was able to become independent, and he would be in charge of that place, he would rule that place, he would rule that city, and all he had to do was send back taxes to the king. And the king and the child did that. He was fair, he was straight, he was kind, he was compassionate, he was a good king, he was a good leader, and he sent back the taxes to his father, huge amounts. And the father would send back a certain amount in order to keep him going, to keep the country functioning, or the city functioning. One time the child realized that the amount of money that he is amassing on behalf of his father is incredible. Instead of sending it to his father, he decides to keep it for himself. Keep it for himself. He's not going to send it back to the father. The father waits 1 month, waits 2 months, waits 3 months, waits 4 months. Waits almost a year, nothing's coming back. Nothing is coming back. The father sends a message to the son, what's going on? The son says, I've decided to keep it for myself. That's it, it's mine, I'm keeping it. The father said, listen, I've been very fair with you. I've given you your position of power. I've given you your fame. I've given you your ability to live a good life. All you have to do is pay back the taxes. Do that. If not, I'm going to come to you with a huge army. The son sends back a letter. He's got his few little guards around him and his little military facility around his that's guarding him, and he says to his father, you've got an army, I've got an army, fine, you know what, let's battle it out. That's what you want, let's battle it out. Father has no choice, and the father comes to battle, and he comes with his huge military, with his tanks and with his helicopter gunships and with the boats and the submarines and the air force. And this guy comes out with his 20 men with Kalashnikovs. And you know, right, let's go to war. And all of a sudden he sees what's going on. And he realizes how ridiculous, how stupid he's been, how crazy outnumbered he is. He doesn't stand a chance. So he decides the only way to get around this is to appeal to his father's compassion. The problem is, he knows that the father's told any of the soldiers, as soon as he's captured, to take him up and kill him. Kill him, get rid of him. There's no way the father's going to let this go. And therefore, how's he going to get to his father? His father's all the way back in the convoy. He's got to get through all these people in order to get to the father. So he thinks of a plan. And his plan is to blow very, very loud noise and a very wailing sound that even a long way away the father can hear, that the son is upset, the son has remorse, the son wants to come back to the father, and he's going to go back. And as a father, there's a special relationship to the child that you should forgive him. And he blows this noise and his father hears, and the father realizes a message, and he takes him back, and things are back on track. We're standing before Musaf, and unfortunately we've been sent by our Kodesh Baruch Hu for a wonderful, wonderful message in this world, to spread Kovod Shamayim, to send back taxes, to bring back Kovod Shamayim, to send back mitzvahs, to behave. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu promises us, if we do that, we'll have a good life. And we've taken the good life, and we haven't sent back the taxes. And the Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to Rosh Hashanah and says, that's it, it's din. That's it. It's all over. I warned you in Elul to come back, to stop bedimi. Nothing happened, that's it, it's din. So what do? We look out, we say, fine, din, we'll come to din, we can deal with that. We're okay. And you realize, the godless of the Ribbono Shel Olam of HaMelech, when you say HaMelech, and you suddenly realize, a Malchus Shemayim, and you suddenly picture, you go through the tefillahs on the yotzeres of Shachris, and talk about the malachim, the srafim, and the millions of malachim coming out, and we so outnumbered, what do we have? And you realize it's all lost. We come to the shofar, and we blow the shofar and say, Rabbeinu Shalom, from a distance, hear us, don't let the malachim, forget about the malachim, go straight to you, Rabbeinu Shalom. And when that is the case, it clears it all away, and we're able to clear the way in order for us to get to Musaf and to speak straight to the Rabbeinu Shalom. That is true, and that is real. But there's a beautiful piece from Ramesha. Ramesha, Dorosh Ramesha, has a very, very wonderful, wonderful piece. And Ramesha, his whole sefer is incredible. But this piece over here in Drush Vov is the most beautiful piece. They said over in Shabbos Shuva in Tof Reish Pei Tes. A long time ago. Yeah, nearly 85 years ago. He said over this beautiful, beautiful piece. And he breaks down the whole message of the shofar in a way that I believe, if you get this clear, completely changes the way we see the shofar, and we see Malchus, Zechoinus, and Shofarus. We see the whole concept of everything coming together of Hashanah in the most incredibly beautiful way. He asks a few questions. In fact, he asks 8 questions. Okay? Number one, very simply, the Rambam says the shofar is supposed to be Ma'ira, wake us up. How does a shofar wake us up? What does a shofar do to wake us up? It's a loud noise. What does it do more than that? Secondly, he asks, why is it, if we need to be woken up, why do we need the process of having 3 times tekiah, trua, tekiah? Why do we need 9 koilas? If you need to be woken up, have one koil, have one long tekiah, very loud tekiah. What is the concept of having tekiah, shvarim, trua, tekiah, shvarim, trua, 3 times 9 koilas, which we actually translate into 100 koilas? Why do we need so many koilas if it's enough just to wake us up? Thirdly, he asks, if one looks in the Torah calls it a Yom Teruah. Zichron Teruah, Yom Teruah, yeah? In other words, the Torah says, it calls it a Teruah. There's no mention in the Torah of a Tekiah. Doesn't mention the word Tekiah by Rosh Hashanah. So why is it that only through the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Flamed Gimel on the base, the Gemara learns that you got to have a Teruah, but it's got to be a tekiah beforehand and a tekiah afterwards. Why is there no mention of a tekiah? Why is the Torah only focus on the element of trua rather than the tekiah and the trua? Fourth question he asks is, the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva says, Rosh Hashanah, im eino tekiah lemalchius lomahu maskir. If one doesn't blow shofar during malchius, what would be the point of having shofar? What does shofar have to do with malchus? In other words, the only reason why we do malchus is because of the shofar. What connection is there between the malchus and the shofar? The fifth question he asks, Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tez Zayin Amud Aleph, Imru lefonai malchus, kadei shetam lichuni aleichem. Say malchus in Rosh Hashanah, in order that I should become the king over you. Zichroinois, say Zichroinos, Kadei Shiyalu Zichroinechem Lefana Letoiva. Mention things that remind about the past, or the good things of the past. Now, I should remember well. Ubameh B'Shofar. And how with the Shofar? How does the Shofar bring Zichroinos Toivos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How does that exactly work? Okay? Sixth question he asks is, the Rebbe Vol says, why do you blow a shofar of an ayil? So he says, an ayil is to remind us of Akedas Yitzchak ben Avram. Says the Gemara, umale ani aleichem. And I reckon it, kilo akadatem atzmechem lefonai. If you blow the shofar, it's as if you fulfill that Akedah. What Yitzchak did then, by listening to the shofar, you did that process. The incredible mysterious nefesh of Akedah. I reckon that if you blow the shofar. How do I blow the shofar? Does that have any resemblance to what happened during the Akedah? The seventh question is, which is a fantastically strong question. The Gemara says that on Shabbos, Chazal came along and were metaken not to blow the shofar on Shabbos. Even though shofar has these incredible skulas of waking us up to tshuva, and malchius, and zechreinus, and through shofar, in other words, it is the integral key to having a successful year, for some reason, on Shabbos, Chazal said, don't blow the shofar on Shabbos. Why? Shema Yavirena Dalad Amos, because perhaps you'll carry it for Amos and Shusar Abim. It's such a suffix Svex Veker. It's such a doubtful thing. In other words, what, you keep the shofar in shul. What's the big deal? Maybe a person will take the shofar outside shul. Maybe he won't. Maybe he'll take out shul, outside shul, the place where the Shusar Abim. Maybe it's not a Shusar Abim. How many places are Shusar Abim today? 600,000 people with the width of a Shusar Abim. And because of that, Mevatel the mitzvah say of shofar, which has incredible powers to, in order to change our whole year. How did Chazal come along and be mevatel shofar is so important because of a chashash made with Shemi Avren Dal Damas. In fact, Tosfos says a very strange thing. Tosfos says in Daf Tezayin of a base, the Maskul She'ein, that if it did fall on Shabbos and you don't blow the shofar because of what Chazal told you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reckons as if he did blow the shofar. How does that work exactly? Okay, so here we have a lot of very difficult questions to understand on basic principles of shofar. Explains Rav Moshe that if one looks into ourselves and looks in and takes stock of the year, there are three fundamental elements that we have to take into account that can change the way we see the world. Number one, very, very, very poshut and very important. Number one is, which direction are we taking in life? And he says, there's a direction that the Torah dictates is the correct way. He says, all we need really. Now, I once heard from a rabbi, an Australian rabbi, being Kiruv, Rebecha. He said, unfortunately, he once met a very frum-looking yid who said to Rabbi Becher that he does not believe in Hashem. He does not believe in Hashem. So Becher said, what does that mean? Does that mean you don't keep Shabbos? No, I keep Shabbos. Does that mean you don't educate children for Torah? Of course I do. He said, if you don't believe in Hashem, why do you do this? He said, because it's a very good lifestyle. It's a very secure lifestyle. It's very secure. You know, I know where my kids are going to be. I don't want them taking drugs and being on the streets, messing the time in a public high school. I know where my wife's going to be loyal to me, but I don't really believe in Hashem. Now, Nebuch, this person is unfortunately a very, very sad individual. Very sad, because it doesn't take much to believe in the Rebbeinu Shleilem. It doesn't take much. He just poshut is missing guidance, and hopefully, by meeting Rebbecha, he actually got the guidance. But the message from this is that living a lifestyle of a religious Jew is not a huge mesiras nefesh. It's not a huge mesiras nefesh. You know, let's take Gezel. If a person has a clarity that panasa comes from Ribbono Shel Olam, and whether you like it or whether you don't like it, it is going to be nigzar and rosh hashanah how much money you're going to get, then why should a person steal? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure you get the money legally. Therefore, why put yourself into a situation where your integrity is at stake, where you can get punished by the government, where you can be caught out and get a bad name by the people? What's the point? What is the point? Gezel, be honest. Look into yourself. Get the basic belief in Ribbono Shel Olam. We'll make sure a person doesn't even have an Nisoyon for Gezel. In fact, he'll only give tzedakah. He realizes that tzedakah is a way of connecting with Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a way of connecting with people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give him back what he gives with tzedakah. What's the big nesoyin of tzedakah? Shabbos. Everybody needs a day off. Everyone needs. Even Pari understood that. Shabbos. What greater, most beautiful day is there than Shabbos, where you disconnect from your iPhone and from your Chas v'Shalom, everyone, right? And your internet and your telephone and your fax machine and your car, and you sit down and you just have a meal together with your children, with your wife, and enjoy each other's company, and to go to shul and to focus on the real things in life. A person with Mechal Shabbos is Nebuch. Nebuch is Mechal Shabbos. Lashon Hara. What does that help us, Lashon Hara? And the day goes back to the person, there's strife and there's anger and there's machlekas. If a person just looked into the life and saw the reality of what an Aveira does and saw the promise, what mitzvah does, he wouldn't do it. And therefore the direction of life, looking into ourselves, looking into what's important, what's not important, do we ever gain from an Aveira? Do we ever lose out by a mitzvah? The person will get that direction in life. That's number one. He says the next point is, The second point a person got to focus on, the first, what would I'll call the first level, I'll call it the focus. The focus of the direction in life. The second thing is that not only is it a choice whether I want to keep Shabbos, whether I don't want to keep Shabbos, whether it's good for my family, whether it's not good for my family, at the end of the day, there is schar v'inish. There's consequences. If you do a mitzvah, you'll get schar. If you do an avera, there will be an oynish. You don't like to talk about it, but there will be an oynish. Unless a person does tshuva, there will be an oynish. There's no getting away with it. And therefore, the second thing is consequences. The third principle is that the end game, end of the day, when it's all said and done, even if Rishoyim look like they're earning and Tzaddikim look like they're suffering, at the end of the day, this world is very, very finite. We all end up in a box. It's a monopoly game. You buy a house here, you get a hotel there, you sell up, you get bankrupt, you don't get bankrupt. You all get put in a box. At the end of the day, that's it. It's a game. And the end of it, whatever you've gained, whatever you've earned, in Nitzchius, that's going to take into the next world. So the end, really, it is the end. It is the end game. It is the focus of what we're doing in our life to earn our existence in the next world. So there is the direction in this world, there are the consequences, and the focus of the next world. Says Rav Moshe, that really is the split of Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofus. Okay? But he introduces this with a very beautiful, beautiful understanding. He says, the primary example of actually focusing on what this world is all about can be brought out with one very simple mitzvah. He says, the reason why people don't look at what mitzvahs and avarice is all about is because they don't have a value system. Ah, Hashem won't mind if I speak a bit of Lashon Hara, come on, you know, yeah, I'm weak. And one doesn't see the reality. If a person saw the quality of what a mitzvah does to him and what a blemish and avarice does, a person wouldn't do it. It's just a lack of clarity. He said the best way to bring out the quality of what avera is, what mitzvah is one very simple mitzvah, or avera as it were, of the Issur Hoitzah on Shabbos. Hoitzah on Shabbos. Taking out something on Shabbos. Now, so I would think shechita, shechting an animal, taking an animal, slaughtering an animal is a malach on Shabbos. That's big. That's big. You know, building is big, digging, you know, those are big of it. Okay, those are big malachos. But if I carry in my pocket something small into a shulchan rabbin, that's called doing something. What's a big deal? Carrying it in my pocket, my siddur, in a shulchan rabbin, my yesh, Boi Shalom minds, Boi Shalom cares. Of course he does, and that is if you have edim and hasra, if you have warning and edim, that person's chayv misa for that. So walking out into the street is very much the paradigm example of a person not realizing just how chomor, just how stringent avera is. And more than that, the reshus harabim and the reshus hayochid, taking out from one reshus to the other, is the focus of what life is all about. There are certain times where private is supposed to stay private. Something reshus hayochid is supposed to stay in reshus hayochid. Marriage is a private affair. A bond between a husband and wife doesn't have to go out to the street. That sneers, that remains at home. In other words, to take Rishus HaYochid into Rishus HaRabim is a breakdown of society. Making something public that's supposed to stay private is a breakdown of society. You must not take something that is private and make it hefgen into Rishus HaRabim. A secret, a friend has confided in you something. He's trusted you. To take something that was said in Rishus HaYochid and to make Rishus HaRabim is a breakdown of society. So therefore we learn from Shabbos that sometimes something Rishus HaYochid may not be taken out to Rishus HaRabim. And the other way around as well. Something Rishus HaRabim must not be taken to Rishus HaYochid. If a Kodesh Baruch Hu has blessed a person with finances that are more than he needs to look after himself, then a Kodesh Baruch Hu has entrusted him to look after society. He has no right to take it for himself, to take Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid. A person has no right to make something that belongs to the public, to make it his. A person has no right, if he's a Talmud Chacham, to keep Torah for himself. Something that's supposed to be taught to other people, to not take the responsibility and keep it private, is a breakdown of society. It is a disruption of Torah. And therefore, Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYochid have his own dinim. So the Chazal, on Rosh Hashanah, said that forget about Shaitan Rosh Hashanah. The main focus is taking from one Rishus to the other. Focus on the Issa of taking out on Shabbos. Realize that what you think is not so chomor is chomor. Get the quality, get the value system back into society. Know what's private should remain private. Know what's public should remain public. Don't mish the yitzras. Don't mix things up. And therefore we are willing to sacrifice the mitzvah of Shofar in order for you to get clear this incredible idea of what Tzor Shabbos is all about. Of taking out Shabbos is all about. And that's Peshat in Tosfos. Tosfos says that even without blowing the Shofar, if a person understands the value of what the lesson is teaching us, of how chomor moving at doing an avera is, and what's supposed to be in one place not supposed to be taken somewhere else, the shofar lesson has reached us even without blowing a shofar. But not always do we have that lesson, and therefore says Rav Moshe like this: let's understand how shofar wakes us up to those three elements talked about beforehand: the direction in life, consequences, and the end. Yeah, how do those three things, we blow shofar, do malchus, zechonis, and shofaris, how do these things wake us up? So Rav Moshe says, if one looks into the Torah, it says, when Moshe Rabbeinu went out to call the Klal Yisrael, Bamidbar, Yud, Pasuk Zayin, to the Hakel Esa'on, to bring everyone together, what did he blow? He blew tekiyas. He blew the tekiyah, without any teruah. However, when they journeyed, he blew a tekiyah, a teruah, and a tekiyah. Why? Explains Rav Moshe, and this is a principle he works all the way through. Tekiyah is straightforward. Teruah is a disruption. When Moshe Rabbeinu is bringing Klal Yisrael together, the only way to bring them all together is to leave behind any disruption, to leave behind machlokes, to leave behind differences, and to bring Klal Yisrael together, hakel esa'on, to bring everyone together, is only going to be with a tekiyah. That is done with one straightforward sound. When it came to traveling, though, why did Klal Yisrael have to travel so many times? Why? Because they messed up. Because they went into Eretz Yisrael with the Meraglim and they came back and had to travel for 40 years. And therefore, to travel with Klal Yisrael, there's a tekiyah that says, Klal Yisrael, everything was straightforward beforehand. Teruah, you messed up. There's an interruption. Do. There's interruption. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael, you want to come back on track? Do tekiyah. Take it back again. Says Rav Moshe, that is a message of Malchus on Rosh Hashanah. Malchus Rosh Hashanah is that life is straightforward. Rabbi Yisrael has put a Shama Tahira into every Klal Yisrael. The Kai, Neshamosh, and the Sata B'Tahira, he is Tahir. It wants to do Ratzon Hashem. It's a tekiyah, straight tekiyah. But focus on the Teruah of our life. Focus on the hesitations. Focus on the misplaced values of our life. Focus on that. Focus on the Teruah. And then make a tekiyah. Iron that out and put things straight again. That is why the Torah in Rosh Hashanah focuses not on the tekiyah, not on the straightforward. We're supposed to focus on a teruah, on what we've messed up in our lives, on what we have actually disrupted ourselves and disrupted the connection with the Bein Shalom. That is why it's called a Yom Teruah. Looking into ourselves to see where we went wrong and to make a tekiyah and to come back again. That is a tekiyah, the teruah tekiyah you should be thinking about during the Malchus stage. Okay, Rabbi, so you see how this is building up. Yeah? So during Malchus, there are tekiyah, teruah, tekiyah. Think of the tekiyah of how wonderful things were straightforward. How teruah have we, through our actions, have disrupted our connection with the Bein Shalom, and through tshuva, tekiyah, we can connect again and make things straightforward, that we can actually come back on track. That is the first element of our direction in life. Come back on the right direction. Consequences. Yeah? Zechronos. What's Zechronos? Zechronos is consequences. During Zechronos, we mention how HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives reward. We talk about Mei Mabul, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought down the Mei Mabul, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers the Kodesh al Mashiach. These are all different levels of Ribbono Shel Olam with consequences. This is Zichronus. Zichronus. How does a Tekiah, Teruah Tekiah, have to do with Zichronus? Zichronus Tekiah is straightforward, which means that a... Rashi explains it like this. That a person who has Olam Hazeh, yeah, a person who has Olam Hazeh, which is a Tekiah, which is very straightforward for him. You can have a wonderful life, everything's straightforward, everything's blowing straight. All of a sudden, there's a consequence. He can have a Teruah. Suddenly, things can go completely wrong. They can suddenly, things get interrupted. How often do we see this? Businesses collapsing. A person who is healthy, and Rahman al-Itzlan, he feels unwell and he goes to a doctor and his whole life gets turned upside down. Rahman al-Itzlan, a good life of a Tekiah, there's a consequence, there's Oinshin. And it can turn into a Teruah. A Tekiah can turn into a Teruah. There's a consequence. The Sadshani, the other way around as well, a person, a Tzadik, could be going through a life of a Teruah. It could be a difficult life. It could be difficult. But the consequence is, it'll end up to be a Tekiah. A person doing the right thing, although things may be tough, and he may be challenged, and he may have a difficult time, will end up having a Tekiah. How many people, Nebuch last year weren't well, and Baruch Hashem, through Tefillah, and through Tshuva, and through Tzedakah, they've actually pulled through, and have managed, Baruch Hashem, to have a clear bill of health. How many people weren't doing well last year, doing well this year? There's a Teruah can turn into a Tekiah. Schar v'oinish, there's consequences. And that is what we should be thinking about through Zechronis. Tekiah can turn into a Teruah, and a Teruah can turn into a Tekiah. Finally, the Shofaros. Shofaros is always the sign of the end. The end of when Mashiach, yeah, the end of Yom Kippur, we blow a shofar. Shofaros is what Rav Moshe explains, is an analogy of the real end game. He says, end of the day, we live in a world that's very dark, and we can see a Rasha doing very well in this world. Very well. He's doing very well. And we don't see it. We see Tzadik V'ra'aloi and Rasha V'toivloi. It's a very confusing world. The Shofar is supposed to wake us up to reality, like the Rambam says. It's supposed to wake us up that at the end of the day, a Tekiah, a Rasha who's living his life well, there'll be a Teruah at the end. There'll be a Teruah. There will be consequences. At the end of the day, he will have a very difficult afterlife. And a Teruah, a person who suffers through himself, a person puts himself into a difficult situation because he decides to sit and learn. And he wants to have a family, and he does give up on luxuries and family and expensive family holidays. And he is putting himself into a situation where he's spending a morning learning rather than being in business in order to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And life isn't that easy. End of the day, people look at him, Nebuch is driving a 5-year-old car. But it's going to be a Tekiah. The Teruah turns into Tekiah. And that is a focus. So in Malchus, Zichronus and Shofaros, each one has its own message. In Malchus, it's reborn straight. We've messed up. We've done a Teruah. Come back with a Tekiah. In Zichronus, it's consequence. The consequence is a Tekiah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make into a Teruah. And a Teruah can make into a Tekiah because that is a way of Schar V'Oinish. And finally, the Shofaros. One can live through one's life, one doesn't see the Ribbono Shel Olam that well. But at the end of the day, the shofar is the end, the sign of the final call. When it comes to Olam Haba, a Rasha that had a Tekiah life will have a Teruah, and a Tzadik with a Teruah life will have a Tekiah. That is the focus of Rosh Hashanah. And he says, I don't want to spend too much time, and he says that is a Koyach. That's a Koyach that we have through Rosh Hashanah to focus on the Teruah. To focus on changing ourselves on these three dimensions and focusing on that and the Ezes Hashem. Through this, we were able to come back and whatever Teruah we have, bring it back as a Tekiah. to understand the message of Shabbos, of taking out on Shabbos, that nothing in this world is small, nothing is insignificant. A mitzvah is a greater thing you could possibly do, and Avera is terrible. That is Shabbos. A very small thing could be a Chiv Misa. What is supposed to be private should remain private. What's supposed to be public should remain public. Don't change around values. Don't allow the world to teach us these values. I just want to finish off a couple more minutes with an incredible moshel, a beautiful, beautiful moshel of the Rosh Hashanah. Actually, putting it back on each time.
Just checking that she's still on.
Okay. Excuse me a second. Excuse me. Yeah. Levush Yisrael said a beautiful, beautiful moshel, and you can say this over at your table. There's a story of a very powerful Caesar, Caesar Adir, very wealthy man, very powerful king. So he had a son, an extremely eligible daughter, and everybody was grooming their son to marry this daughter. And obviously the Shidduchim came in, flowed in, and the king wasn't interested. He said, why should I take you more than somebody else? I'm not looking for wealth. I've got my own wealth. I'm not looking for power. I have power. I am looking for somebody who's going to look after my wife beautifully, my daughter beautifully. And he had a friend in a distant city, and he brought his friend and he said, I know you have a son. I'd like very much my daughter to marry your son. And I'll give him everything he needs, that he can live a life away. Obviously, being close to me is difficult. Away, lead his own life, and I will look after them. So Kachava, obviously this boy, this bachelor, was incredibly pleased that the king chose him, and he married this daughter in the most beautiful wedding. And he travelled with his new wife, the new princess, he travelled to a distant land and set up home. And those other kings whose sons were not able to marry this daughter would send back all different kinds of juicy gossip that this new son-in-law is not looking after his wife properly, and did everything they could possibly do to disrupt that marriage. And every time the king would actually get nervous, he'd send something back. His daughter would say, Daddy, don't worry, everything's fine, I promise you, I'm well looked after, don't have to believe it. And the king would be calm. One day, this young married couple got into the first real big row. And this boy, this son-in-law, this young man, lost himself. To such an extent that not only did he yell at his poor wife, but he physically maimed her. He physically injured her. He beat her up, and he threw her out of the palace, black and blue, and Nebuch, she was stuck in a gutter there, black and blue. And immediately the word went back to the king that this son-in-law had beat up his wife. And now this son-in-law, Nebuch, has got a complete loss. Until now, he had his wife at his side who can help him. Now, his wife can not only help him, but if the king sees what he did to his poor wife, it'll be even worse. So what's he going to do? So he goes back to the drawing board, he brings back his wife, and his wife said, yeah, I accept your apology, but I can't stand up for you. Look at me. Look what a mess I'm in. I go to my father right now, he's going to kill you on the spot. There's nothing I can do. So he thinks of a plan. He speaks to his father, who's a friend of the king, and he says to his father, listen, you know, it's difficult for me to come right now. I know I've been summoned by the king. I know things are tough. It's difficult for me to come right now. Give me a few days. I want to organize my events and everything. I'll come to you in a few days' time, and I'll be happy to meet you with my wife. So the king says, fine. That's a special favor that you ask the friend, ask, I'm happy to do that for you. Ad kan the moshel. Says the Rosh Yisrod, Rabbeinu Shalom has a beautiful, beautiful daughter, and that's called the Torah. And all the malachim, malachim malo, all the malachim, so why give it to Klal Yisrael? Why give it to a human being? Give it to us! And Rabbeinu Shalom said, no. It's not staying in Shemaim. It's going down to Klal Yisrael. It's going down to the Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's going down to the people that I love. Ahuvai. They love me. It's going down to them. And Klal Yisrael have a Matan Torah and they marry the Torah. And the Malachim come, the Satan comes to Rabbein Shalom and says, Rabbein Shalom, Klal Yisrael not doing everything they can. And the Torah stands up and says, no, they're keeping the Torah. There's Kovod HaTorah. The Torah is being learnt. The Torah is being kept as being valued. The Torah is being treated well. And every time something goes back to Rabbein Shalom, Rabbein Shalom says, no, the Torah is looking after, the Torah is okay, I'm okay with this. Never one day Klal Yisrael reaches a stage where they abuse the Torah, where they don't value Torah, where they don't allow Tamid HaChacham to sit and learn, where Eretz Yisrael, where Rachmanu Litzlan, within one month can cut 2/3 of the yeshiva budget, can make illegal fundraising for yeshivas. They made now a law that Amutot, which is a non-profit organizations, you cannot have a Haredi non-profit organization, which means they want to cut down the support they get from the outside. They want to force yeshivas to close and to go to the army. People who are not working are going to have the kitzvot yiladim, have their child benefits cut right across. Incredible war on Torah. They've taken Torah into the street and beat it up. And now where do we stand? Not talking about the people themselves, Klal Yisrael. Where does Klal Yisrael stand in Eretz Yisrael? Where Iran and Syria are promising to make Israel a place of incredible pain if America launched an attack which is going to be within the next Seres Mei Teshuvah probably. So where do we stand? Where does the Torah stand? How can Torah come and say, Rabbein Shalom, don't worry, Klal Yisrael looking after Torah. All we have is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov go to Rabbein Shalom. Give them another few days. Let's bring back Teshuvah. And with those few days, you know, as I said, the bruises will heal and the Torah will stand back up for us. We have now a few more days to daven as much as we possibly can. Make people aware what life is all about. Make Klal Yisrael aware what's important. What is the reality of life of a Jew? It's not about making some beautiful theatre in Tel Aviv or living up the life in Caesarea. It's about the yeshivas. It's about living life as an Elech Yid or bringing Malchus Shemayim to this world. Allow the Chilonim, allow the secular people to be awakened to that. Allow ourselves to be more awakened to that. Bring us back. Allow the Torah to become a Tekiah. And Be'ez Hashem, we should be Zoicha to a Shon Tevim Masukah or the Shofar Gadol of Mashiach that will be one long Tekiah.